Now, Chew On This, your health and wellness headlines and media propaganda report with Dr. David Friedman and the poster child of sassiness, the author of the Skinny Bitch book series, Kim Barnewen.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. You know, we've all heard the term music can calm the savage beast. Well, according to research published in the Lancet Medical Journal, music reduces the need for painkillers. They studied 7,000 surgical patients that listened to music before, after, and during surgery and found it drastically reduced the need for pain medications. Another study from Nature Neuroscience found music can reduce the need for antidepressant drugs. Listening to and singing along with your favorite tunes releases dopamine, a neurotransmitter that creates pleasure in the brain. Kim, are you in tune with this research?
I love it. I sure am in tune with it. You know, they say that it can slow the pulse and heart rate, lower blood pressure, and it can decrease the levels of stress hormones. So it's such a benefit to patients and such a great idea.
You know, we've covered a lot of topics on this Chew On segment. One of my favorites we covered was how expectant mothers playing classical music near their belly can play that same song years later for their crying child, and they immediately relax and fall asleep. So it actually goes beyond when we're, you know, adults. It goes to when we're in the room, a room with a view,
oh,
in sound.
Oh, my God. A room with a view. I love it. And, you know, we were reading up on it, too, and this surgical center in Kentucky, when patients come in, if they are hand surgery placed, and they get headphones for their patients that have had an emergency that has music playing. So it starts in the waiting room. So when they're getting ready to help these people, they've got the headphones and they've got the music, and it really like helps synchronize the heart rate. It slows the blood pressure, and just a steady tempo of the music helps the patients. It stabilizes them so the doctors can help them a lot easier.
That's great. I know music is my antidepressant drug. I know when stress tries to get the best of me, music will immediately change my entire demeanor. Kim, do you have a favorite like go-to song that puts you in a good mood?
You know, there are these two bands that aren't like the most, you know, popular on the radio, but it's 07 and Morcheeba. And I love them because their music is so, like, soulful and zen, and anything from them just puts me in a happy place.
See, I have a couple oldies that lift my mood. I like Journey's Don't Stop Believing, and, of course, the classic Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin. Actually, when that song comes on, I usually get some weird looks from the people next to me at red lights because you can't sit still.
No, right? That is a good song.
Yeah. You know, as I was reading the research, interesting, it said that people with traumatic brain injuries and age-related dementia are seeing improvements in their medical or their mental capacity after listening to music. So that was part of the study as well. So it's interesting, and I'm a big advocate on that. Let's go from music to Coca-Cola. Research funded by the giant soda manufacturer blames obesity on lack of exercise, not diet. Coca-Cola has partnered with scientists who are looking to advance the notion that people can maintain a healthy weight by focusing more on exercising than by cutting calories. In other words, drink all the Coke you want as long as you hit the treadmill each day. Coke funding this study is what I refer to as biased research, and I spell that B-U-I-A-S-E-D, biased. The scientists hired by Coke told the New York Times, weight-conscious Americans are over-fixated on how much they eat and drink while not paying enough attention to exercise. Considering one Coke contains 300 calories, that would take an hour jog on your treadmill to burn off. And Kim, most people drink five sodas a day, so that's 5 hours to burn off this soda. I can hear you shaking your head. What's your take on eat what you want, just exercise more?
Oh, it's so ridiculous. And the whole thing that, like, Coke wanted to do, you know, this research about it, they funded and everything, it's so ridiculous. I mean, I was in the food service industry for so many years, and I saw the amount of sodas that people drink, even them giving it to their kids. And you think of the size of the sodas nowadays, how big they are. I mean, McDonald's alone, their large is 32 ounces, and people can down those, you know, a few of those in a day like it's nothing. And it's about, 48% of Americans drink soda on a daily basis. This is terrible.
Oh, yeah, and you bring up a good point. As people drink it, they, for some reason, their mind doesn't think that's fattening because it's not something they're chewing and swallowing. I have a patient who tried everything from exercise to changing what she ate, continued to drink sodas, though, and she didn't lose any weight. Finally, she gets off sodas. 6 weeks later, she lost 45 pounds. Soda is definitely public enemy number one.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's amazing. Is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention said that Americans now are getting about 10% of their calories from soda. And that's, you know, in their daily food pyramid. That's ridiculous. Of course we need exercise, but diet plays such a huge role. And as your patient could see, losing that weight just from cutting sodas makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I always say you lose fat in the kitchen and you get toned in the gym. So this Coke-funded study is very wrong. It is much harder to burn off soda in the gym than it is to just cut back on drinking the sugary beverage. I mean, who has 5 hours to devote to exercising each day to burn off five sodas? So you figure you got to run an hour per soda. You got extra 5 hours? No, it's easier to just get off the soda.
Yeah, and it's a lot of people, it's about 5% of Americans, they drink four more sodas daily. So this is adding up. And, you know, I know that the poor soda industry, they're so distraught because people are finding out about, you know, the dangers of drinking too much soda and the benefits of drinking more water. And they're doing anything they can to try to, you know, turn this around for them. But it's got to be a lost cause. I mean, we have to be a little bit smarter than that, I hope.
Exactly. And we've talked in the past about people can make their own soda, put some lemon lime in seltzer water, and you get that fizz, and you still get the flavor in cranberry juice. There's natural ways to get that, you know, bubbly feeling. I enjoy it. I'm drinking it right now. I've got lemon lime seltzer water that I'm drinking. So, you know, practice what I preach as well. So that's great. We may have time to answer an email from a listener. This one's from Liz in New York. Kim and Dr. Friedman, you both emphasize the importance of drinking water. I have two questions. How do I know if I'm dehydrated, and how much water should I drink? Kim, you want to quickly answer that first one. How does someone know if they're dehydrated?
This is a good point. You know, a lot of people will say, you know, I'm getting headaches and I'm feeling really tired. And I say, well, the first culprit, I think, is are you drinking enough water? Because I get the same thing. If I'm not drinking enough, I always end up with headaches and I just don't feel like I have any energy. I up my water intake. I never have to take Advil for that reason. It's usually that I haven't had enough water.
See, and you bring up a good point because with my patients, I often see them come in with headaches, neck pain, back pain. And I'll always ask, how much water do you have today? And 9 out of 10, they say, I didn't have any. They're so dehydrated, Kim. And it really does. It's not just your fuzzy brain thinking, but muscle spasms. If you're getting back pain and spasms and neck pain, you're drinking not enough water or too much caffeine because caffeine dehydrates you. So a lot of coffee drinkers need to replenish more water afterwards.
That makes sense, yeah. Yeah, especially when people are drinking a lot of coffee, too. Yeah. And I think it's just so important because we need not only to keep your body hydrated, but we need to, like, it's just so much healthier for you. And, you know, the gyms nowadays are adding, they have such a variety of water. You've got cucumber water, there's watermelon, right. There's pineapple. In my gym, there's so many different varieties. So it really jazzes up the flavor now.
Yeah, my view for Liz is you should never be thirsty. It's think of it as that the oil light coming on in your car. By then, it's too late. You're out of oil. So if you're thirsty, you waited too long, and how much should you drink? The rule of thumb is one half your body weight in ounces. So if you weigh 120 pounds, that's 60 ounces of water per day. Sip throughout the day. So that's just a nice rule of thumb. And the old, I've had 3, 4, 5 glasses just doesn't cut it because how can that apply to someone who's 300 pounds? He's bigger, she's bigger, they need more water. You can't judge, though. I do 6, 8 glasses. So that's great. All right, that ends another episode of Chew On This. And we are your dynamic duo of due diligence here to help you digest the latest headlines. You can stay up to date with Kim on Twitter at SkinnyBitch. And for my daily health tweets at Dr. David Friedman. If you see a headline you want us to cover, you can always email us at chewonthis@toyourgoodhealthradio.com. More to come. Stay well and stay tuned.